Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show. On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Now, show number 1025. Man, we got a lot to talk about today. Texters 312-981-7200. That's also the phone number. Of course, you can get me at Cochran Show on Twitter, Steve Cochran Show on Facebook. This horrific shooting yesterday occurred in church. So, with all due respect, I go to church. Hopefully you go to church, whatever that means to you. Our thoughts and prayers are not going to get it done. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the fact that Senator Rand Paul was apparently mugged or assaulted by a neighbor in his own yard. Has five broken ribs. President Trump is in Asia, and it's going about as expected so far. The list is endless today of stuff to talk about, but mostly, Dave, right now I'm just concerned about you. Have we had a well-being check on you since Saturday's win?
I'm fine. I'm getting used to it. My cardiovascular fitness has increased greatly the last 3 weeks.
Would you be disappointed at this point if it's not an overtime game?
Of course.
Yeah.
Got to go 4 quarters plus.
It seems like you're expecting it now, and it's totally understandable.
Yes, absolutely.
I texted with Jim Phillips, the AD.
Yeah, he showed me.
At Northwestern, and I was concerned about him as well, because he's an excitable guy.
Yes, he is.
And I think he feels like this could be a whole Northwestern medicine cardiovascular benefit to everybody.
He's talking about providing cardiac testing at games.
Yeah, just show up.
That's good. Yeah.
Just get a ticket to a Northwestern
game. That's a
good idea. Just show up. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, basketball's about to start.
Friday night. We got a game at Allstate Arena. And they're ranked 19th in the country, so busy week ahead.
Dave basically looks at his family this time of year and says, I'll see you in the spring.
That's about right.
At 6:14, we'll get to traffic in just a second. And again, we're going to get into the shooting. We've got coverage all over. We're going to get into all of that. But one of the things that struck me most was Maureen and I and Amy as well came over, had Abigail Grace all weekend. And, you forget how tired tiny children can make you. Mm-hmm. But it was unbelievably great. And then that happens in Texas. And if you don't pause, and I had the same sensation last week when we were talking about the Foundation for Young Ross, that little boy who died of brain cancer when his mom was in.
Kim.
And, on Saturday night I was at the Marion Joy Foundation fundraiser and helped them raise a bunch of money. It all comes back to the same thing about how fortunate I am. It's just count your blessings stuff.
Absolutely.
And just in a fraction of a second, you're here and not there.
But you worry about your kids. You worry about your granddaughter. You know, what's ahead? You know.
And we used to just worry about them when they went out driving and things like that. Now we worry about them when they're in church and at a theater and a supermarket, everywhere. It's
church and elementary school.
Yeah,
can you think of two places that ought to be safer than those two things?
Nope. Right.
Nope.
And you thought, well, what happened in Charleston, it'll never happen in a church again. Well, it did, and it's worse. And it happens to be in one of the most gun-loving states in the country and gun-loving areas in the world, in Texas. We'll get an update from there in a moment. Let's do the top six right now.
Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel. It's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
This is not a rerun. It's a new one. A gunman with a military-style rifle killed at least 26 and wounded at least 20 others, including a 5-year-old and the 14-year-old daughter of the pastor, during a service at a Baptist church in Sutherland Springs, Texas. The shooter then left and was involved in a car chase with a couple of locals with guns. They were trying to take him down. Before they got to do that, he crashed his car and shot himself. The police found him dead. It is the deadliest mass shooting in Texas history. President Trump says it's a mental health problem at the highest level, not a gun problem. We'll take all that on. Next. Jamie Cox is a 30-year-old Rockford police officer on the force for less than a year. Is it he or she? I want to get this right, Jamie.
It is a he.
It is a he.
Yeah.
Jamie and another man died early Sunday morning following a scuffle during a traffic stop and a car crash 2 blocks away. I don't even understand what developed here. Was this like a police incident or a road rage incident or some combination? Do we know, Steve?
They're still investigating. It's starting to look like it was a situation where somehow a gun was pulled on this officer. He returned fire. And it was that kind of a situation.
But we don't know why the man would have had a gun or shot at a cop.
No, it was a traffic stop. So something developed during that traffic stop. That's
something. When a cop gets out of a car and comes to your car to write you a speeding ticket, he doesn't know who you are. He or she doesn't know what you have in your car.
My dad was a state trooper, and he always used to tell us that was the most dangerous part of his job, getting out and coming to your car and doing that.
Next. President Trump, on a 12-day visit, going to take him to 5 Asian countries. He's got to deal with a problem back here, not of his making, involving Wilbur Ross, the U.S. Secretary of Commerce, and his investments. But let me do this before we get to that. Give me another paper crumple here. There we go. Now I'll move on to the Wilbur Ross. Sorry, my voice. I'm struggling this morning.
That almost sounds like a potato chip. There you go.
Thanks. Appreciate it. No, I'm at the end of the cold where you sound worse than you are. And so the voice is a little thin. I apologize. Wilbur Ross, U.S. Secretary of Commerce, has investments in a shipping company with ties to the son-in-law of Vladimir Putin. So you have Trump's inner circle with his family, Putin's inner circle with his family, and the cabinet tied to that circle. It's a bad geometry problem at this point. More on the Wilbur Ross situation later. And then, directly contributing much of the Trump administration's position on much of the Trump administration's position on climate change, 13 federal agencies, after an exhaustive scientific report, said humans are the dominant cause of global temperature increases and climate change. No word yet from the White House. And finally, Shailene Flanagan, how's that for a good Irish girl, became the first American woman to win the New York City Marathon since Mickey Gorman in 1977. Joffrey Kamwara of Kenya won the men's race in a race yesterday with the highest security it had ever seen and came off without a hitch.
Incident-free, yes.
Top 6 brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men, a report on the Texas shooting live next. Traffic with Mary.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
The largest mass shooting in our state's history. There's so many families who've lost family members. Fathers, mothers, sons, and daughters.
23 found deceased inside the church, 2 deceased outside the church, and now one of them that was transported that was injured has deceased, bringing the total to 26.
We don't know if that number will rise or not. All we know is that's too many. And this will be a long suffering mourning for those in pain.
In church, in small town America, I grew up in a town of about 500 people. And you know everybody. All the cliches are true if you don't know small town life. You know everybody. Everybody knows you. And maybe it's not the same anymore, but you used to just leave the door unlocked and your car open. That's the least of the problems now. Brad Milkey from ABC News joins us. You're in Sutherland Springs, Brad?
Yeah, that's right. I'm across the street from the church right now, and what you said is absolutely right as far as if you weren't in that church, you knew at least one person who was. That is the vibe you get speaking to people around here. This is a place with a couple gas stations, a couple stores, a post office that I'm parked at right now, and a couple churches. I mean, that is the type of vibe. And so There were dozens of people in that church and several hundred around them that knew all of those people in there. And today this community has just been absolutely ripped apart.
Everybody wants to know why. It's a natural question to ask why. And we live in a time now where this happens so often. It's not disrespectful to ask why right now while the crime scene is still being processed. But again, we have no idea, do we?
Not really, no. We have the suspect, Devin Kelly, this 26-year-old man who is from New Braunfels, Texas. This is about 45 minutes away, so still in the San Antonio area. But no clear connection to this town. It's still not clear whether he just picked this place randomly on a map or whether he came here knowing people perhaps in that congregation or not. It doesn't appear necessarily anyone in that room that seemed to know him, at least not yet. And so the why really is the question. Whatever he came here for, though, he seems certainly prepared. Eyewitnesses saw him emerge from his truck. He left it running, by the way. We were just told by an eyewitness a few minutes ago. Got out in black paramilitary gear, even a bulletproof vest. He had more guns in his car than just the rifle that he took with him, allegedly, into this church. And he unloaded several magazines while he was in there. Eventually, he got back into his car when somebody was able to return fire, and then he came to his end after a crash. Still not from that gunshot wound and kind of bled out on the road, or whether he crashed and then gave himself maybe a self-inflicted wound.
The two people that followed him and chased him down were locals who heard the shots. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's right. One local who saw what was going on grabbed his own rifle and took him on. And then somebody who saw this all happening came by with his truck. Together, they jumped in their truck. They didn't exchange any fire on that car chase, but they were calling police officers. And then police officers who found the suspect dead in his car by the road.
I had heard an early report that the shooter was married. I know that he spent some time in military prison for assaulting his wife and child, but do we know if he's still married? Do we know if his wife is talking or anybody affiliated with him is talking?
I haven't heard from anyone related to him, save for a neighbor who lived nearby his property and said that Devin Kelly seems normal enough to him from the outside, although he did hear a lot of gunfire coming from his property, what he assumed was target practice late at night. Other than that, what we know is he was formerly in the Air Force. Back in 2010, he only lasted a couple of years before he was court-martialed for, like you said, domestic abuse against his wife and then his 11-month-old child. And that charge in itself, when he was convicted and then discharged with bad conduct, that's just a one notch above a dishonorable discharge, that's supposed to rule you out from buying weapons in the future, military or not. And so why he was able then just last year to buy this AR-15-style weapon is still being investigated.
I was told also, and unconfirmed, but you've obviously gone deeper on this, the bad conduct piece is, since it is a notch above the court-martial that you mentioned, you could claim a whiskers difference and still buy a gun legally. In other words, another loophole. But your understanding is that he just lied on the form?
Yeah, well, no, according to the military code, you are not supposed to be able to get a weapon, even if you're on duty, after you get one of these wraps, and you're not supposed to be able to buy one in the future, according to current background check laws. The question is whether that background check was properly conducted, and if it was, and it might have been, it's also possible that the Air Force did not properly file the information that was supposed to be filed. So that background check and what exactly went into it is going to be a big question in the coming days, because from the sources we've spoken to in military and law enforcement, this guy was not supposed to be able to buy a gun, not last year.
Last question, at least for now, is what are the people there saying outside of the obvious? Because this is gun country, and these folks, they love church, they love their family, and they also love their guns. Was anybody talking about that this morning?
Yeah, I was going to say, we've spoken to people who quite quickly said, listen, I don't want this to become a gun rights question, because the congregants here said that it was a gun that saved them, even if it was a gun that came in and took 26 of their friends. So they certainly were not in the mood to get in any conversation about gun laws and background checks. Obviously, they were more focused on mourning, but pretty quickly a couple witnesses came forward and said, no, this doesn't change what I'm thinking. In fact, the Texas Attorney General said, essentially, thank God that somebody nearby had a gun, and perhaps if there were if there was a gun in that church, that more people would have been saved. So you're certainly not seeing anyone come out and say that, you know, fewer people should have access to semi-automatic weapons.
Pregnant mother is dead, 14-year-old daughter of the pastor, another child, I've heard. It's just sickening, Brad.
Yeah, it goes from ages 5 all the way up to 72, and it just speaks to how tight-knit this community is. Again, the shooter, by the way, was white. A lot of the congregation
right.
was white and Hispanic. Doesn't appear as though this was a sort of a Charleston situation, but again, still don't know. And frankly, I, you know, you talk to some people who want to know the question why, and other people who simply just don't care. They're still very much in the process of mourning, and some people couldn't help themselves but to come here last night, hold hands, and pray outside of the church that for the last, you know, several years they've been able to pray inside of.
Brad Mielke, ABC News, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll hear from Jim Ryan, based in Texas as well, coming up in about an hour or so. Dr. Kevin Most, what do you say? What do you say to people? Dr. Kevin Most can help us out with some of that and the stress that we're all living under. We'll get to the big story in a moment. Andrea is off for a couple of days. Steve Cochran Show continues next on 720 WGN.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now. I've got a stomach pain that's low, fungus on my toe, and I need you now.
It's one of these songs where if you're listening to it, but you're only like half listening in the car, you think, wow, nice voice, really sweet song. And then you hear the word fungus. Dr. Kevin Most joins us, brought to you by Northwestern Medicine. John DeCuss singing live there a little bit. Musical director for the program. Nice job, John. Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, John. Very talented man, Mr. DeCuss is.
He's really good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Oh, dear Lord.
Just to clear up the obvious here for a second, as I sound like I'm super sick today, I'm at that point in the cold where you sound much worse than you are, which is a bad time to have a radio show. But do you have anything for the voice that'll keep me going till 10?
Yeah. Stop talking.
Okay. Excellent. Let me write that down. Advice from my doctor. And I want to say hi to all the fine people from Mary and Joy and a bunch of your friends as well, because Northwestern Medicine is the proud proprietor of the Mary and Joy folks, even though that's not the right word. You know, did I mention I'm getting over being sick? But the Mary and Joy thing was great. I think we raised a record amount of money and a lot of laughs.
That's great. You know, and we do appreciate it. And people probably don't know that side of you, Steve, and how many nights you are out actually emceeing and helping raise money for various charities. But I can tell you that Northwestern really appreciates everything you do for us. And I'm sure the folks at Mary and Joy are very happy this morning from a successful event.
Unnecessary, but nice of you to say. I will say that we all have gifts. My gift is to take money from rich people.
Yeah.
So that's legally. The one skill that I have. Yes, legally. Yeah. Let's talk about anxiety here. This horrific story in Texas, what happened in Las Vegas, the politics in this country, the screaming and yelling at each other. I don't think we've ever been more anxious as people, have we?
Probably not. And the thing that you just brought up is if you think about the incidents that have happened, those are happening at places where we feel safe, we right. feel comfortable, in church, at a concert, on a jogging track. So now we're starting to see people getting anxious about places where they used to feel safe. It used to be a place I could feel safe, and now I'm not so safe.
So anxiety is, we know depression is obviously a legitimate condition. Anxiety is a respected, realized medical condition.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a whole spectrum of anxiety. We all have anxiety. I mean, I'm sure something makes you anxious. Something makes you pause a little bit, take a couple deep breaths, and get you a little concerned. So every single one of us has anxiety. A portion of us have what we call anxiety disorder, and that's when it actually impacts your daily life. You don't want to go to work. You don't go to work. You won't drive over a bridge. You know, there's certain things that people will do where it starts to change their life when it goes from simple anxiety to an anxiety disorder.
So is this like a PTSD that won't go away?
Yeah, exactly. And have various triggers. So for PTSD, there are triggers. You know, and some of those triggers, you try to figure out what those are, and that's how you treat them. But for others, there's no logic behind it. For PTSD, you can at least feel the logic. Something very dramatic happened in your life, and now it makes you anxious. For other people, it's a common thing that occurs every day, and there's no logic behind why I get anxious from heights.
Right. Anxiety disorder, how common?
Very common. You know, in the United States, about 40 million people. And probably the biggest thing, Steve,
40 million, that's 1 in 8 people.
Correct. Correct. And the biggest thing is that the vast majority of them don't get treated or treat themselves or try to treat themselves, and yet some of their own treatments are actually detrimental to their health.
Well, let's talk about that, because is this a talk therapy thing, a meds thing, maybe both?
It can be. It can be the entire extreme. You know, sometimes it can be something, you know, just as simple as, you know what, I want you to change your life a little bit. I want you to decrease your alcohol and caffeine. I want you to eat well. I want you to sleep, and I want you to exercise. Simple things like that can help people deal with stress and can help people deal with anxiety. You know, some of the simple things that even the psychotherapists and the family doctors are going to teach you. Let me teach you how meditation can help you. Let me teach you how yoga, something simple like that, can help you. And really, the behavioral therapy of knowing what the trigger is, and when that happens, what are we going to do to get your mind thinking about something else or get you into an activity at that time that's going to keep you away from being anxious?
Here's some of the things that may be indicative of the condition we're talking about. Feeling restless, having insomnia, a sweaty, tingly situation in your hands or feet, dry mouth, racing thoughts, unwanted thoughts that are tough to shake, excessive worry, shortness of breath, chest pain, palpitations, poor concentration, an overall feeling of anxiousness. I guess I'd add one more, a feeling of hopelessness.
Yes, yeah. And hopelessness is the one that we really get concerned, because then anxiety starts to morph into depression, and at those cases, at those people, individuals were very concerned about. You list those symptoms, and one thing I would say to people is, you know, people say, oh, I know that. Yeah, I've had that. Make sure you check with your doctor, because some of those we're concerned about. Shortness of breath, chest pain, palpitations. Okay, yeah, that can be anxiety, but can also be heart disease. So we want to make sure that we eliminate some of those. And actually, those are some of the great triggers that bring people into the doctor's office that say, you know what, I'm reassuring you, this is not heart disease, but let me talk to you about anxiety now, and really will make an impact on their life.
Talk about how you can do that medically the right way and how people are doing it the wrong way after we take care of traffic from Mary. What do you have? More with Dr. Kevin Most. And, you know, Doc, this discussion can spill over into the sexual harassment conversation as well, but I want to stay on the anxiety piece for a second. You mentioned people treat this incorrectly. What do they do?
Well, some of the incorrect treatment that they're going to do is they're going to start to use alcohol more often. They're going to use
self-medicate.
Correct. And inappropriately, you know, stimulant medication, more tobacco use. They're going to try to not worry about sleep and not allow sleep to occur. So they're going to stay more active, doing things that are going to keep them up. And sleep deprivation is very important. They're not going to exercise. We're getting to a very sedentary lifestyle here portion of you. And then two probably big things is having a very negative mindset and letting yourself be a victim. Those are two that we need to step up and say, you know what, you have to change that a little bit. You have to have a little bit more positive outlook. People often won't be able to do that without professional help, though.
Is there a specific medication? You know, medication isn't going to solve this, but is there a specific medication that helps?
Well, the beauty of it is that when you sit and talk with a physician and a doctor, and he's going to get the whole picture, and there are medications that help. There are medications that are just used in anxiety situations. There are others that are antidepressive medications that also help with anxiety that can be taken on a more regular basis versus I'm going to get on an airplane and I'm afraid of airplanes, therefore I'm going to take this medication at this time. Versus you have a generalized anxiety disorder, and we're going to put you on a medication that has very low side effects but may help you deal with the anxiety. So the doctor has a wide choice of medications if it gets to that point.
And there are no supplements that we're aware of that you can go, well, I'll just go to the CVS or Walgreens and grab this.
No, you know, but I would say that, you know, eating properly is key to this.
Eating and exercise, right?
Absolutely. Having a good balanced diet, taking a multivitamin. Don't let your body start to get run down, because it's only going to feed into the mental portion of it as well.
John is in front of John DeCosta here. John is in front of crowds all the time. You had a panic attack, huh?
Well, and that's what I wanted to know, the difference between a panic attack and anxiety, because I was, you know, I've been doing this for 35 years. Here's a room. I'm doing a corporate show, 800 people. And I started to think about what I do for a living, that none of these people knew me. They were counting on me to entertain them. And I'm like, what is going on? I had to leave the room and then come back later, as I had to get out of my mind. So what's the difference between panic and anxiety?
So a panic attack is essentially anxiety on steroids. That's the ultimate point of where it gets to a point where you are almost non-functional and you can't think properly and you can't. Most people, when they're anxious, can at least logically think and move through things. When it gets to a point of a panic attack, you have pushed yourself to a point where you have no control. You don't have control of yourself. You don't have control of your environment. And that can be concerning depending on the situation. Often it's embarrassing as well, which makes it even more difficult to step back out of it.
What do you say to an anxious kid to, if not help, at least not make it worse?
Yeah, Steve, the kids are a big concern right now. With news media being 24/7, you can't turn on the TV this morning without hearing about Texas. It's on every single channel.
Sure.
Now, you got to remember that a lot of these kids, younger kids, are watching that, possibly having breakfast, getting ready to go to school, and they say, wow, I was just in church yesterday, and this all happened in church. Their world is so much smaller. They don't get the grasp of how big this country is, how big the world is, and therefore they compartmentalize it down to their point. And that's a little bit concerning. So I try to tell parents, you know what? Bad incidents like this happen. Watch it in the evening. You don't need to know today, right now, what's going on. Watch it in the evening when your child is asleep. Try to keep them away from that and talk about more positive things. If you have to expose them to it, explain to them as much as well as you can that this is a small incident. It happened thousands of miles away. They're still safe here. They're still safe at school. But it's very difficult, and minimizing the exposure to kids is probably the biggest thing.
Last question, and this relates more to the sexual harassment story, but the anxiety piece certainly could be applied to it as well. But I think it's important for people to know that when a friend comes to you and says, I had an incident at work, this happened or that's happened, there could be a need for medical attention. How do you know when to tell your friend, we got to go to the hospital?
Yeah, and it's with all the stories now about sexual harassment, we have to remember that there's a victim, and the victim is that individual who's reaching out. And people that reach out to their friends have to realize that their friends aren't experts, and the friends have to realize that they're not an expert, because these people actually need treatment. They just don't need to say, you know what, this person did this to me 5 years ago, 2 weeks ago, continues to do it every day. That individual needs treatment, because they get depressed. They have anxiety. They have guilt. They have embarrassment. So we're talking about the individuals who do it, but we have to remember that they had the second victim. So when a friend comes to you and shares that with you, make sure you get them into their doctor. Help them get to their doctor. Their doctor is going to kind of discuss things with them. Assuredly, there's the reporting side of it, but someone's got to make sure that we're dealing with the individual in the physical and mental side of it. These people have high stress. They're very anxious. They can have stomach pain. They can have weight loss. They won't want to go to work. Some of the similar things we're talking about with anxiety. They can have guilt. Professional help is much more important. So as a good friend, if someone does this and comes forward to you, be consoling to them, but make sure they get professional help. Make sure they get in to get treated.
Yeah, the thing that I have learned is it's not about how I feel because my friend's upset. It's about how they feel. So shut up, listen more, don't offer advice that is not helpful, like, oh, I wouldn't say that, or I don't know if I'd do that, or walk it off or snap out of it. None of that's helpful. If they've come to you, they've already, and by the way, because they've already thought of all of that. So if they come to you, they're looking for you to listen and, you know, to just hear them out, and then you can provide some resources, and obviously professional help being first. Doc, good stuff. Thanks as always.
You got it, man. Talk to you soon.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. Mary will update your traffic in the news in just a couple of minutes, which is after this.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
We continue live from the Allstate Showcase studio. If you caught Steve's news in the middle or are not familiar with the updates that are just breaking in the Texas shooting, the gunman in Sunday's church mass shooting had in-laws who attended the church in this small town, but they were not present at the time of the massacre. The in-laws came to the church after hearing about the attack. We don't know if that was the motive, but at least now there seems to be some sort of tie. 26 dead, 20 injured in a town of 600. At least 8 people came from the same family. A relative and a community leader stepped up and said, and they have not identified the name of this family because they don't want the survivors and the others to be bothered. A woman who was about 5 months pregnant killed. 3 of her children killed. The pregnant woman's brother-in-law and his young child dead.
We now know that 12 to 14 of the wounded or killed were children. That according to police this morning.
3 other members of the same family of 8 wounded. It's just beyond outrageous. It's just... Senator Durbin joins us now. We got a whole list of stuff we could talk to you about, but this is obviously front and center. Good morning, Senator.
How are you doing, Steve? I just heard you're recounting the numbers from Texas. Of course, our hearts go out to all the survivors and family, and we think about, again, another gun tragedy. The list just goes on and on and on. This has become, unfortunately, the new normal in America, where every week or so we have some outrageous mass killing. How much longer will it take before we stop turning our backs on the obvious things we need to do to make guns safer, to make sure that people use them responsibly, to keep them out of the hands of the people who are going to misuse them? Talk about it in Washington.
Here's what we know. We know that a lunatic and a gun are a bad combination. We also know that regardless of the academic definition of a mental health problem, anybody that kills somebody else is crazy, either in that moment or for an extended period of time. And if there's any pattern of behavior or legal hurdles they have to go over to get a gun, we're not doing a good enough job of preventing crazy people from getting guns. This particular shooter, Senator, had a problem in the Air Force to the point where he spent a year in the brig. And yet he still was able to get out after his discharge, not a dishonorable discharge, one notch below that in military terms, and still was able to legally buy a gun. How's that even fathomable?
We need a common sense conversation about this. And we need gun owners, people who use them legally, safely, responsibly, people who go hunting, people who want them for self-defense, to step up and lead this conversation. There is no excuse for what you just described. There is no excuse for someone being on the terrorist watch list and still allowed to purchase firearms in the United States. There's no excuse for these bump stocks, for goodness sakes, where you can shoot 100 rounds in 7 seconds. That's what happened in Las Vegas.
Right.
I mean, come on. Let's draw reasonable lines here within the Second Amendment limits and make sure that we do our best to keep guns out of the hands of those who misuse them.
Well, and that's the thing, too, because the argument you're going to hear is, well, that's not going to stop a bad guy with a gun. They're going to do it anyway. Look, we're trying to limit the carnage at this point. That's the first step. Limit the possibility and limit the damage once the shooting starts. And it's not so simplistic as we need more people with guns. We have more guns in this country than we have people. It's statistically provable there's more than 330 million guns in this country. And I'm a Second Amendment supporter, but we know that 75% of NRA members surveyed say that we need to make some changes, that these reasonable common sense laws should, in fact, be put into place. So as much of a fan of Senator Biden as I am, yesterday he said, don't give up, people, don't give up. The people aren't giving up. They're waiting for you guys in Congress to do something.
I understand that. And people point to the gun lobby, and it is an effective political unit. Make no mistake. I've been on the other side of their effort when I was a downstate congressman, even as a member of the United States Senate. But there's something larger at stake here. It isn't just the gun lobby. It is a mentality toward guns. And there is a wide divide, even within our state, of attitudes toward firearms. The attitude most people feel in the Chicago and suburban areas versus downstate. It is a cultural divide, and that's why my plea is to the people who are gun owners. We need you. We need you to step up here and guide us responsibly toward what we all know we want, and that is gun safety, to use the Second Amendment and not make it a suicide pact for innocent Americans.
There is no point in the Constitution where it says you have a right to own a gun regardless of the circumstances. It should be hard to get a gun. As a matter of fact, it should be harder than it is. I'm just getting over a cold. If I can't walk into a Walgreens or a CVS without showing my driver's license to buy certain cold medications, it should be way harder for you to get a gun. And Senator, I've heard arguments of people going, well, we're not going to close the gun show loophole because if I want to sell a gun to my brother who's never done anything wrong, I shouldn't have to go through the red tape. Yes, you should. It's a gun. I can't walk up at 16 years old and say, give me a license. I want to drive a car. I mean, grow up, everybody.
We know in the real world of politics that family transactions with firearms have usually been exempted. We're ready to concede the point if they'll go further and say those who aren't family members are going to have a background check. When you look at what goes on in Chicago, we've got a handful of gun stores in suburban communities where a lot of straw purchasing is going on. Girlfriends buying guns for thugs and felons and gang members who could not pass a background check. We've got the gun show problem in Northwest Indiana and other communities. I mean, those are obvious. For goodness sakes, there is no excuse for people who want to drive over to Northwest Indiana and fill a trunk of their car with guns without any background checks. We've got to have a universal background check so that the folks who are going to misuse them have a tougher time. And you say, well, come on, they're not going to go through the background check if they have a criminal record. Want to bet? About $100,000 a year do. I mean, they're not that smart. And they go through it, and we catch them, and we stop them. So that's what we got to do. That's
and by the way, we're not trying to stop El Chapo here. We got a bunch of really good people working on the drug cartels and working on the major gang issues. The major gang issues and a crazy guy who walks into a church or a lunatic in Las Vegas are two separate issues. We have to find a way to fund the mental health care we need in this country at a young enough age where you can head out the pass for some of these people. But when that bridge has already been crossed, we have to find a way to the best of our ability, as you said, to stop the lunatic from buying the gun. Or in the case of the Vegas shooter, he had enough to man his own army.
And another thing I want to mention, Steve, and I may have said it before in the show, I went over to the Cook County Juvenile Facility to sit down with those young people, teenagers, who were accused of shooting on the streets of Chicago. And I sat down with them for a while, and then I sat down with their counselors. I'm trying to look into this. What is behind all this? And I said to the counselors, who are these kids who spray a car, spray a home, kill innocent people, grandmothers and babies, and don't think twice about it? And they said they've got every problem in the book, but 92% of them have been victims of violent trauma, or they themselves have witnessed violent trauma in their lives. And that has created this mindset that desperately needs an intervention, a counseling at some early point before the most horrible things occur, as they do often.
The background check, the bump stock question, which we thought was going to get through Congress, which is now stalled, the question about clip size, the gun show loophole, all two-foot putts. They're gimmies. We're not even talking about the AR-15 ban and the stuff that was made into law that expired and now Congress won't touch it. All of those, including the AR-15 ban, should be obvious. And I truly believe that if we had a fair survey of legitimate law-abiding gun owners in this country, they do agree with every one of those because they want to be safe and they want their families safe. So it falls on you guys.
It does, and it falls on the voters. Let me just be very blunt.
Yeah, to vote out the people that aren't getting it done.
Voters have to ask the questions, and they can't take a maybe for an answer. I mean, there comes a point, if we're going to do something about it, you've got to vote for people in either political party who are willing to stand up and do something sensible. And if you don't, more of the same.
I've got to ask you a couple other things while I've got you for at least a couple more minutes. The Rand Paul situation, he got mugged or something in his own yard, attacked by a neighbor. Do you know if he's all right?
I think he's fine. He was tackled from behind. I don't you know, he's a medical doctor himself, and I think he's fine. The reports are pretty good, but you got to be careful when you go home. Watch out for
it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. The tax situation with the tax bill that was put forward last week. Have you seen what the House is taking up?
We just got a report on it. Listen to how this goes so the people listening have an idea what we're faced with. They disclosed the bill on last Thursday. They are determined to pass it in the House before Friday. So it's a matter of 8 days to change the tax code that affects the entire U.S. economy.
Yeah,
now they've told us in the Senate, as soon as it's passed in the House, we're taking it up. We're passing it before we go home for Thanksgiving. And we're supposed to leave for Thanksgiving. I think it's November the 16th. We have all of about 7 days. This sounds like the health care bill all over again.
Well, and it also tells you something about Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell's priorities, that this gun issue, there's no way we could get it done. It could take years. And they want to change the entire tax code in a week and a half.
They do. We did health care, which is 1/6 of the economy, and that wasn't good enough for them. Now we're going to tackle, without hearings and amendments, we're going to tackle a bill that affects the entire economy and everybody listening to your program. Are there some good things for some of your listeners? Yes. But are there terrible things in there? Why are we still talking about tax breaks for the wealthiest people in America? I don't get a lot of letters from people say, you know, I have a multi-billion-dollar estate, and I don't want to pay any taxes to this government. I don't get a lot of those letters. And that's what we're talking about with the estate tax. 2 out of every 1,000 people would even qualify for paying an estate tax. I've asked them, identify one farmer in Illinois who lost their farm because of the estate tax, still waiting. It is part of the rural legend, not the urban legend, that goes around when these debates get started.
And lastly, the Bob Mueller investigation, it appears in all accounts that Mueller is doing everything he can as fast as he can, and some results are coming now. Do you expect this to be another momentous week, or is that hard to say?
It is hard to say, but here's the good news. More and more Republican congressmen and senators are saying, let him finish his job. Now, it's true there's a group in the House that want to remove him. They want him out of office. They don't like what he's doing. But the fact of the matter is most are saying, let him finish his job. He's a professional. Let him do this. Let him report to the American people. No one should interfere, not Congress, not the president. Let him finish his job. I feel that. I trust this man. I trust his judgment.
And if you're like me, I'm not speaking for you, I'm speaking for me, where you feel like we trace the call, it's in the House, and the country needs to be protected from the guy in the White House, why do we not need legislation putting this on Congress to approve a removal of Mueller?
I would support that, because I really think that right now it says for cause, but it really, any president who decides to point the finger and say, fire that man, he would have to say it to the deputy AG, Rosenstein. And if Rosenstein refused, then, of course, he'd fire him and then replace him with someone who would do what the president wishes. We need a much clearer line of authority here. No one, not even the president, is above the law.
Senator Durbin, thank you. Where are you headed this morning?
Up to McHenry County with a new county board chairman up there, Jack Franks. We're going to meet some local folks, talk about some local issues.
And I'm sure you're going to hear a lot about guns there as well.
I'll bet I do.
All right, safe travels. Thank you. And 7:26. Let's give away some Hawks tickets. We could use a little lightning in the mood here. Free Hawks tickets. Special guest poet and riddle writer and musician and comedian and tap dancer John DeCoste in just a moment. Mary, what's the update? The Hawks replay. Whenever the Hawks get beat, we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on it because we know they're going to turn it around. Sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. Here's last night.
The Montreal Canadiens beat the Blackhawks here tonight, 2-0.
That's everything you need to know about last night's game.
Pretty well sums it up.
That's it. That's a summary. How about Hawks tickets for you? Let's give them away right now. All the kids are dancing to it. Tickets to see the Hawks and the New Jersey Devils Sunday, November 12th. That's next Sunday night. You're going to be entered to win four season tickets after you win these tickets. Courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons online at FourSeasonsHeatingCooling.com. You need to be the person that knows the answer to the Hawk riddle. John is here. John, you write these riddles how often?
For every game.
And do you sit down, you know, at one time and write them, or is it when the inspiration hits you?
Little of both, actually. Okay. I try to get a month out through the time.
And are you ever driving where you don't have a pen, where a riddle occurs to you and you're desperately concerned you might forget the riddle?
Oh, many times, many times. I was in the hospital, and I left the hospital to get a pen.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Because you really were in the hospital.
Yes, and these are that important.
Well, they are. And as I've said many times, we're the only station giving you riddles.
Yes.
Nobody else is doing this.
Riddle Radio 720.
Yes. For those of you who are going, where have all the gold riddles gone? Right here, man. Right here. So for tickets to the Hawks and the Devils, identify this famous Chicagoan. Is that a good?
Correct.
Okay. Ready when you are.
I am 6'5" for the gridiron game, and Orville was given as my middle name. I began at the end, just off center. With 99 reasons, I became a fridge mentor.
All right, and you can get a fridge mentor at Apt Electronics and Appliances. That's Steve Shapiro about the fridge mentor.
He is the fridge mentor, actually.
312-981-7200. First correct caller is the winner next. Marcy's in Evanston. Good morning, Marcy.
Good morning, Steve.
I hope it's a good Monday for you.
Oh, it is now.
All right, good. John, one more time on the riddle that you wrote.
Yes, I am 6'5" for the gridiron game, and Oliver was given as my middle name. I began at the end, just off center, with 99 reasons I became a fridge mentor.
Who is the fridge mentor, Marcy?
It's Hamp.
The Hamp.
Yes.
The Hamster. Guess what? You're in. You got Devils Blackhawks tickets for Sunday night, and you're qualified for season tickets next season for Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Back Rubs.
Oh, my son will be thrilled.
Oh, congratulations. You're a good mom. Hold on. Let's get straight to the big story here. Does Daniel Oliver Hampton know his brother Orville Hampton?
I don't know. We'll have to ask him next time he's on Friday.
Listen closely, people. You'll get the inside jokes.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
745. Boy, Monday, weighty, heavy Monday. So much troubling news to bad news to horrific news. And stories percolating, but still you have a lot of things that we need to solve, need to tackle, need to look at. One of the things that came out of the sexual harassment stories with Harvey Weinstein are all the other businesses that are now, as industries, I mean, to realize what a big problem they have. And one of those is state government. Ray Hodges is Springfield editor of the DailyLine.net and broke a story out of Springfield last week about one of the members in leadership who has since been removed from that position. But not surprisingly, when you find one, you find more. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for being on. Congrats on breaking this story. Explain the background of that story first.
Basically, what we've got is a story in three parts that evolved when women in Springfield, in and around the state capitol, working in either government or government-adjacent industries like lobbyists or activists, all got together and realized, hashtag me too. There was an open letter that started circulating among women across Springfield and in state government saying, you know, I've experienced X, Y, and Z harassment or sexual assault from a state lawmaker, and there has been no recourse, no way to redress these claims. Once the letter started picking up traction and really gathering momentum across signatures, you know, at this point, over 200 signatures, to be clear, that's when we started to see some bills coming out of the Capitol. The pressure was really on. And at that point, we started seeing more and more information coming out of lawmakers who were eager to respond and, you know, like any of us, would want to get out ahead of this.
So what we know now seems to be that lobbyists and others, including, I assume, those that we elect, are going to have to do a measure of sensitivity training to better understand their behavior. I understand this is a first step, but it certainly doesn't feel like enough.
Right. And that, in fact, that's what a lot of the women who were involved and embroiled in this were starting to come forward and say. One of the things that, you know, we reported out at the Daily Line was, you know, as soon as this started happening, you know, one of the best things you can do in order to get a grasp on the context is kind of look at how other state legislatures have handled it, right? Because they've got models across the country where you can kind of see how this has happened. One of the most common ways to handle these things is a legislative ethics commission or a legislative inspector general, the top watchdog, someone who's able to...
Yeah, we don't even have an IG in the office, do we?
You got it. So what I did was I walked right over to the IG's office and poked my head in. And unfortunately, I couldn't get it very far in because the door was locked and, you know, the lights were off. We haven't had an IG for, you know, at least 2 years, but we do know that the last permanent IG, he stepped down from office last day was June 30th, 2014. Since then, there has been some interim and acting folks who stepped up, but no one in a permanent capacity.
And no one, I'm sure, with the full authority to do what they need to do. So people understand what the IG is. It's essentially like, it's the closest thing to the HR department in Springfield, right?
You got it. Absolutely. And there's different ones, right? So there's the Inspector General over the legislature, and then there's one over the Secretary of State's office. There's one over the governor's office and the executive branch. So every branch of government is supposed to have a legislative or a ethics watchdog who is there and is able to, you know, bring these cases into full investigation, hold power holders accountable. Especially in cases where ethics breaches, you know, could be delicate enough to hurt someone.
So the mandatory sensitivity training, is this going to be, this is based on feel and who you're talking to, is this the end of this story for Springfield? Or, like other parts of the country and certainly in Hollywood, are people, and especially women here, effectively angry enough where they're not going to let it die?
Well, one thing we had over the weekend that women's groups and different, you know, even very staunch conservative Republicans have come out and vocally been very strong about getting a new IG in place. And, you know, over the weekend we saw that the Legislative Ethics Commission, who's tasked with doing that, they met and they have appointed a former U.S. Attorney, assistant U.S. attorney out of Chicago. Her name is Julie Porter.
Okay.
She just received the appointment, so that means that the post, at least for right now, is going to be filled. So at least we do see that the legislature is moving very quickly on getting something substantive done other than the training. Now, the training, like you said, House Speaker Mike Madigan obviously put forward a bill. He wanted to see sensitivity training across the board. What we can say is that in other states where this similar sort of training has been put in place, there have been reports coming out this year and continuously about harassment still taking place. So it's up for debate as to whether or not there's really any effectiveness to that sort of training.
Yeah,
these cases are still cropping up.
Yeah, I don't want to be cynical here, but listen, I'm a guy, and here's what I know. This could be a very easy excuse to slow down the behavior until you get to crank it up again. Because I mean, in what I said last week, I'll always say this because I know it's true. It's a character issue. You know, guys.
No, that's not something that's unheard of, especially that argument has come out of lawmakers' mouths and advocates' mouths. And you know what they're saying is these men are smart. They make laws. A lot of them are lawyers. They know what sexual harassment is.
Of course you do.
They don't have to be taught to do it otherwise. One other part of Madigan's bill, however, which may kind of be subtle and may not necessarily click with a lot of audience who are watching this unfold, is that the technical part of the bill is to make sure that there's sexual harassment language specifically in place so that the inspector general has the authority to take it on and so that there's no question about who gets to come after that. So that is one technical aspect that's supposed to put some more teeth and more tools in the office. But again, there's an issue where if there's a claim that's over, you know, 12 months old, the inspector general can't do anything about it. Our new IG, Ms. Julie Porter, is now coming into the field seeing upwards to 27 complaints, many as old as 3 years old. So who knows whether or not she'll be able to affect any change for those cases as well with such a small window to work with.
Ray Hodge, nice work. Springfield editor, thedailyline.net. That's thedailyline.net. Continued reporting there, and I know we'll be in touch. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll take a break for traffic here. We'll come back, and then we will summarize, to the best of my ability, what happened in Texas with some additional thoughts on that. After 8, Dean will be on, and we'll line it up a bit because it needs that. And then Jim Ryan from ABC News in Sutherland Springs to give us the latest on the ground there. Coach Ditka later. So the Bears get back at it this week. We've got one of the world's great dog trainers in the 9 o'clock hour and the CLTV hour. So all that coming up. Oh, and we're going to play the match game at some point. We just don't know where yet. But it's coming. You've been warned. If we accept that nobody has an answer to secure that a madman with a gun is ever going to walk into where you are or where your family is and start shooting, if we accept that there's no 100% fix, can we agree that we could at least make a dent in the problem? Everybody's worried about winning the argument, not solving the problem. When is enough enough? Well, you know when it should have been enough? It should have been enough at Newtown. Little kids being shot in the head. Should have been enough. It's one of the worst days this country's ever seen. It wasn't enough. Should have been enough in Charleston. People just going to church. And a racist walks in the back door and opens fire and kills 9. Wasn't enough. And now in Texas, at least 26 dead. And the majority of them kids. So there are politicians who are saying today, we can't quit. The public can't quit. The public can't let the news cycle just spin and move on to the next story. The public's not quitting. Congress is hoping you're going to quit. Congress is hoping you'll quit. They're hoping you'll move on to the next story. They're hoping you didn't know anybody in Texas. They're hoping that you've got only so much empathy and care in your life, and there's going to be another story 10 minutes down the road. We're not quitting. They are. Look, it's two things. Yes, it's a mental health issue. Of course it is. You got to be crazy to grab a gun and start shooting people. But it's the access to guns as well. It takes a lunatic with a gun.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
Dean Richards live at Channel 9. Good morning, my friend.
You don't have to yell.
Dean Richards live at Channel 9. Good morning, my friend.
I'm looking something up.
On the internet?
On the Twitter. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to find Drake, you know, the rapper Drake. You're friends with him, I know.
Well, I get confused for him a lot, but I wouldn't call us friends.
I'm trying to find his Twitter handle.
It's Drake looks like Steve. Hashtag Drake looks like Steve.
That's what I wasn't looking
for. All right, well, good luck with that.
Find a video where he catches a brassiere that was thrown to him from the audience.
You sure it was Drake?
Have you ever had that happen?
I have, yeah, the last stand-up show.
Any of your comedy shows?
Yeah. Yeah, but the problem is they threw everything. They threw shoes, a purse, their bra. They threw everything.
full wardrobe.
It was crazy. I didn't know what was happening. Hey, speaking of Drake, Chance the Rapper is going to do a Channel 9 hit?
Yeah, it's going to be more than a hit. He's partnering with us to do the drive-through toy drive. This will be our 15th annual drive-through toy drive that we do, where we collect toys and distribute them to needy families around the Chicago area. And this year, it's going to be the beneficiary group is going to be called Social Works. It's Chance the Rapper's youth empowerment group.
So he's going to hang out with you guys all morning.
Amazing organization, and I'm told he's going to be here with us all morning. So I'm desperately trying to find a baseball cap with the number 3 on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a good look for both of you.
Like he does.
Yeah. Kanye was at the Aragon this weekend.
Kanye made a...
Cuckoo-ca-choo, Kanye?
Surprise visit. Cuckoo-ca-choo?
Yeah. He's a little kooky. Kanye is a little kooky.
You're a little Simon and Garfunkel this morning.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. He made a surprise visit during the Kid Cudi concert. I'm full of your rap news today,
you
Steve.
You really are.
Yes.
Full of... You might
what's
say
more, what's
of
more
it.
Ridiculous than Dean and I talking about hip-hop and rap?
Sup, Dean?
King Cudi.
By the way, that was Ice John DeCoss.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Ice John DeCoss.
Sup?
Cudi is doing his show. C, as I like to call it, because I really don't have time for two syllables.
Who does?
He's doing his show, and Kanye walks out and surprises everybody. Number one, that just he was unannounced. But it was his first appearance in over a year. It was about a year ago. It was November of last year that he was in Sacramento and canceled the rest of his tour with what was described as a nervous breakdown. So it was significant that he was back on stage and he performed a couple of songs with C. Yo.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I understand P. Diddy is changing his name again.
He did.
I don't have the full results on this, but is it true he just now wants to be called Dave?
Well, great would that be?
Yeah, yeah, be great. No, now, what's he calling
something? I think he wants now be called Brother Love.
Okay.
Yeah, I think.
Oh, I thought it was pea butter.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
I think I can't believe
that's
it's butter.
That's really good. Hey, we all love Tom Hanks, and over the weekend, Tom Hanks is doing what when these kids wanted to get married?
Brother Love, Steve, is what Diddy now wants to be called.
Not until I sue him for copyright infringement.
Brother Love. So a couple in Texas, they're at the Texas Book Fair.
Yeah.
And honestly, I can't think of anything that sounds like more fun to do on a weekend than go to the Texas Book Fair.
Right.
Tom Hanks has a new book out right now.
About typewriters.
And he wrote the whole thing on a typewriter. He's a huge
typewriter fan.
Typewriter fanatic. So he's taking questions from the audience, and then at a point says, you know what, I'm bored with your questions. I'd like to ask a question myself. Reaches in his pocket, pulls out a note, it's a note that a guy gave him. To propose that said, Nikki, will you marry me? And then so the guy stands up, he's, you know, with Nikki, gets down on one knee and, you know, gives her a ring. She said yes. But how nice is that? Tom
very
Hanks
sweet.
Gets involved, you know, can't keep his two cents, his two-time Oscar-winning cents right. out right. of other people's business all the time.
Isn't Tom already married, though?
Yes. There had to be a moment where the woman thought she was marrying Tom Hanks.
Yes.
And thought, look, he's old for me, but this could work out.
Yeah. What am I doing with this mope sitting next to me?
I was saying yes to Tom.
Speaking of old, Larry David is almost 70 and got in trouble this weekend for doing material that was too edgy on Saturday Night Live. My main problem with his material was it wasn't funny enough, not so much his choices. However, we don't need to re-litigate it here. He did and there's no way if you didn't hear this, you would remotely agree with it. He did a Holocaust joke,
yeah.
And he tried to do a follow-up to a Holocaust joke. I know what you're saying, Steve. There's never been a funny Holocaust joke. You may well be right. Larry always has been a little out there. He pushed it a little farther than he probably needed to.
Did you watch us?
I watched the whole thing.
Both of you guys. You did watch?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you think the monologue was out? I mean, never mind the joke that's got the anti-defamation.
There's an alarm that goes off in any legitimate comedian's head when you go, oh, dude, don't go down this road.
Yeah.
And that alarm was ringing loudly. I thought he had funny moments in the monologue, but no, I didn't think it was that funny.
How about the rest of the show?
First third worked in a little bit of Weekend Update. The rest of it was awful.
Yeah, I thought it was nice to see the Houston Astros made sure the Cubs aren't the only team to have an awkward Saturday Night Live appearance after winning the World Series.
Yep. Yep. And
they came out. I don't remember the names of which players, but
Altuve sat on somebody's lap.
Yeah.
Three that came out. Leslie Jones was sitting
that
on
was it, Leslie
the
Jones.
Weekend Update desk in her Yankees jersey, and they you know came out and surprised her, and hilarity ensued.
You got some great Denzel audio that we can't run because we have no time. We got to get on this ABC story.
Right. We have that's right.
But in the meantime, Denzel was in town. Watch Channel 9 for details on that. And Kevin Spacey essentially got fired from show business this weekend, and I'm not kidding.
Fired from Netflix, and Richard Dreyfuss's son now has come forward and said that he was groped by Kevin Spacey while Richard Dreyfuss, the father, was in the room.
Wow. Wow. Hadn't heard that one.
Yep.
Thanks, bud. Let's go to Jim Ryan from ABC News live in Texas. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Steve. Still looking for answers here. The people who live in this community trying to sort this all out, trying to make sense of it. The deaths of 26 people, the injuries sustained by around 20 others, including children, 5 to 72. That's the age range of people who died when a man named Devin Kelly walked into this church across the street from where I am, opened fire, and did so much damage. And it's known that in his car, in his sport utility vehicle, which wrecked out about 5 miles from here after a chase by citizens, that there were other guns found inside. So he apparently wasn't finished after doing so much damage at the church.
We have heard this morning his in-laws attended that church, weren't there for the service. Anything to be made of that?
Well, yeah, and that may have been something that may be the reason that he came here. He lived in New Braunfels, which is on the other side of San Antonio from here, south of San Antonio. And so there's really no indication, no reason for him to come here to Sutherland Springs other than some family-type connection. His in-laws or former in-laws. He had had family problems. He had had charges filed on him in connection with an assault on his own kid and his wife. That explains the bad conduct discharge from the U.S. Air Force. We have to wonder what exactly this all means, why he came here. That's really the only connection that anyone can find.
What's the governor of Texas saying?
Well, he's appealing for, and he gave an emotional statement yesterday here in the community, or a little distance from the community, choking back tears, urging the country to support these people and, encouraging the investigators as they continue and offering condolences to those first responders who walked into that church and found the bodies of so many people. So the sort of statement I think you would expect from the governor of a state where something this horrible has happened.
It's something we never discuss, but can you imagine what the first responders go through and
yes.
why there's so much unreported PTSD with first responders who have to walk into that? I mean, Jim, you've covered really difficult stories your entire career. It's got to be otherworldly to be standing across the street from a small town church knowing that there's dead bodies inside.
Well, yes. I mean, the bodies have been removed now, but yesterday when I got here, they had not. And no, it is. It's kind of a disturbing thing. It threw me back to, and you start thinking, well, why here? Well,
right.
This part of Texas has kind of gotten used to this sort of thing. Back to the 90s when a man walked into a Luby's cafeteria not too far from here, open fire. That, I think, at that time was the worst mass shooting in U.S. history, and it's been badly eclipsed by incidents since then. The shooting at Fort Hood and at Al Hassan, there was a shooting then that happened after that one as well. It just goes on and on.
Yeah, and I mentioned this on the air a few minutes ago. It would be miraculous and remarkable if Texas, maybe the number one, in quotes, gun state in the country, would lead on some sensible changes here. But that remains to be seen. The president's comments so far have been what?
He said specifically this isn't a gun issue, but a mental health issue. We were waiting to see tweets from him early on about the possibility that this had something to do with radical Islamic terrorism. Well, that's not the case here. I think that people at the state level, the lieutenant governor was talking about that initially, that Christians were under attack. But if they're under attack, then they were under attack from within, a guy who was in the military and had a grudge against people in the church because of who they were, not because of their religion.
And there's no note or anything indicative of any of this, right?
Not that we know about. Now, the FBI may have found something at his house. They did find his wife and his child. They were fine. You know, I think that was a big concern, that once this all happened,
sure.
that they would go back to the house
sure.
and find that these two had been victims as well, but they were not.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jim Ryan, ABC News, on the ground in Texas, in this tiny town, Sutherland Springs, Texas. Jake, what was it, 650 people? I think that's right, 650 people. And Dave, the town I grew up in upstate New York, Dryden, New York, 2,000 people. It's a small town,
so
obviously.
You know what it's like.
But even in a town of 2,000 people, you know everybody.
Yeah.
You know? And the people you don't know, you know them by sight because you see them, because they're in your community. It's just outrageous.
You know, I mentioned to you earlier, my earliest memory of anything like this
uh-huh.
was the Texas clock tower sniper
sure.
in Austin
yeah.
in like the early 60s, I think. And there were, I think, a total, including his family, his wife and mother, I think, who were later found dead. I think there were 17. I think that gunman's name was Whitman.
Right.
And I think there were 17 total killed. And at the time,
you
that was unthinkable.
Right. Here's a one in a billion. This will never happen again.
Yeah.
Now we've had two of the five worst shootings in this country have happened in the last 35 days. Not that we don't have a problem with radical fundamentalist terrorism in this country and in this world, we do. But those two shootings, white guys. So let's talk about the problem. Crazy doesn't care what color you are. It's 8:30. Skosh past that now. We'll come back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
Ditka.
Well, it's coming.
Right now, right for us at 22,000 miles an hour.
Ditka.
Not a soul on earth can hide from
it. The Steve Cochran Show now welcomes Mike Ditka.
I'm happy for Steve, and I told him I'm proud of him. I tell you what.
The best Bears conversation is right now on 720 WGN.
Mike and I both have a lot in common. Strikingly handsome. Both clients of Super Agent Steve Mandel, and both on the Steve Cochran Show right now. Good morning, Coach.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Stop laughing when I said strikingly handsome.
No, I mean, the same agent, Steve, is a great guy. I get that, but good looking. Come on, man. I'm old. You're old.
All right, so Bears-Packers week. This is always special, but am I wrong about this, Coach? It doesn't feel like this modern era of players get it the same way you guys did.
Well, it's probably not the same as we did. That was a big thing. But don't forget, there were less teams, and the Bears-Packers was a big game. The year I can remember when I first signed with the Bears, and Coach Hallis, one of the first things he told me, he says, it's imperative that we beat the Packers. We have to beat the Green Bay Packers. That was a big rivalry, the Chicago Bears, and you know, we had our good games with them. Of course, in the early 60s, the Packers were the best football team in football. And, of course, we squeaked it out in 63 and won a championship. But they're awfully good. It's a great organization. They do a great job up there, just like the Bears do.
What's it like to coach up there if you're the coach of the Chicago Bears?
It's noisy. You can't hear anything. I mean, we try to use signals to get the plays in. Then we started alternating players in to get the plays in. It's really, really loud. And it's a little bit louder when the Green Bay Packers play the Chicago Bears, believe me.
And I would think if somebody yells something at you that might be of a personal nature, even if you turned around to find them, it's just a sea of yellow and green snowmobile suits, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but I heard all that stuff, too. I heard it all. I took one of them out, and I gave a piece of my mind.
Not the most vivid memory, but if you look back at games you coached at Lambeau, and I was there for a bunch of them, you had some great wins there, but was that Mikowski game, was that the toughest game you ever had up there, the way it ended?
Yeah, the way it ended, no question about it. The greatest game we had up there was when we went up there in 1963 and beat the Packers, and we went on to win the championship. That was the greatest. But the Mikowski thing, things could have been. I could have handled things differently, but we're all competitive, and we think, well, we got to do this and we got to do that. But it all worked out. The rivalry between the Bears and Packers is good for football. It really is. Now, I know the Packers don't have their quarterback in the game, and I think that really hurts them. I think Aaron Rodgers is as good as there is in the game right today. So we'll see what happens. The Bears have an opportunity. You can't worry about winning 10 games until you win one.
Well, that's a very good point.
Two in a row, three in a row. Try to make the playoffs. Get this the record evened up, and then try to get it up on it. You can't look down the road. You can only do what you can do this week. That's the only thing you can control. You can't control next 2 weeks from now or a month from now. Just take care of the Packers. That's all.
So you're talking about '60s, the Lombardi thing. He's a human statue. I mean, you didn't know how what his legacy would be. Certainly in '63. But was there a thing after the game where the coaches would seek each other out like there is now?
Yeah, I think in back in 63, Coach Lombardi and Coach Hallis were good friends.
Okay.
And so there was never a problem with that. I mean, Vince Lombardi is one of the great gentlemen that ever coached and been in the National Football League. He was a great asset. The Packers were – when they got him, he was a coach with the Giants, and they signed him, and nobody knew what was going to happen. Now, he had some good players there, but he got all those players pulling together for the same reasons. And I think that's a sign of leadership, and he was a great leader, and the Packers had great teams throughout that era.
If you're coaching the Bears going to the bye week, and they practiced a couple days last week, and then they took, I think, 4 days, I think they took Thursday, Friday, and the rest of the weekend off. Do you just tell your guys, Mike, as a coach, hey, just get as far away from football as you can for the next 4 days, heal up, and get your mind on something else?
Yeah, the main thing you got to do is make sure you get healed up. You get everybody who needs treatment, get them in there, get the treatments. And, you know, you get your mind off of football. You have to get your mind off football. You're playing 16 weeks of football, and your mind's on it constantly. You know, and there's a lot of pressure, believe it or not. I mean, there is a lot of pressure to try to win a football game. And so get away from it for a while. And when you come back refreshed and understand the season starts now. It starts right now. Don't worry about what has happened. Worry about what is going to happen today. And that's what they got to do. They got to forget about the past, live in the present, and deal with that. And they can do it. I mean, the Bears got a good enough football team to beat the Packers and beat everybody in that division. But they got to do it.
I think we got a better quarterback.
Right now? Well,
based on the two guys that will be on the field this week, I think we got a better quarterback.
I don't think there's any question about it. I agree with you 100%. I think the Bears are a better football team. I really do. I think they do a lot of things very well. They run the football very well, play good special teams. I love their defense. They get after you. You know, the whole thing is, in football, you can't play one side of the ball and not the other. You've got to be able to do both of them. You know, we went through a period there when I was coaching, you know, where we ran the ball as good as anybody in football, or better than anybody in football with Walter. But you still have to be able to throw the football. You still have to be able to protect your quarterback. You know, you got to have good special teams. You got to be able to cover the punt, cover the kickoffs, you know, things like that. And so it's the whole package. And, you know, that's what you got to look for.
8-8 could get you in, man. 8-8. This is the 8-8 league now. 8-8 could get you in. 7-9 in a couple of spots will get you in.
Well, it's going to be interesting, but I don't think you look at that. You don't look at what.
No, that's the fan's perspective. Right. You got to go 1 week at a time.
One game at a time. Don't worry about that. But you're right. In that division, I don't know how good Minnesota is. Detroit has its problems. Green Bay certainly has its problems without Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, it's there for the taking. You know, just play every game one at a time. This week you take care of business. Next week you go to the next one.
Injuries have always been a part of this game. They were part of it when you played, part of it when you coached. It seems, I know they've always been there. This past week just seems like it was especially brutal for the league from an injury standpoint when you have the horrible injury to Zach Miller last Sunday and then a few days later to have Deshaun Watson, who's such a promising young quarterback, go down the way he did. I know it's not new, Mike, but how do those teams, and not so much the Bears, I mean the Bears have come to terms with it, I think, but like Houston, I mean, you got so much riding on this young guy, and to lose him like that, how do you kind of press on to your next game? Because obviously the next game didn't go very well for him yesterday.
Well, it's really hard. I mean, when you lose your starting quarterback, it is really, really tough. Everybody's got to circle the wagons. And, you know, again, you know, football, the game today is that people are bigger, faster, stronger. That means they hit with more velocity. Things are going to give. I mean, now I know in the case of some of the players, they were planting their foot and trying to cut when they got hurt. Zach, I mean, what Zach's injury with that was a shame, really.
Awful.
I mean, he's a good. I love to watch him. He's a good football player.
Yep.
But you know, you look at it, and injuries are a part of football. You say, well, how do you avoid them? You can't avoid them. I mean, the other guy's trying to hit you as hard as he can. You're trying to hit him as hard as you can. And if you don't hit the right way, something's going to give.
You think about the premise. Mm-hmm. The biggest, strongest grown men on the planet running into each other as fast as they can. Yeah, somebody's going to get hurt.
Right.
Yeah. It's basically everything your mother told you to avoid. Hey, Coach, before I let you go, memory time here. The worst hit you ever took, and I don't mean from an injury standpoint, but somebody that rung your bell and you can still feel it today.
Well, I caught a pass, and I had to jump for it a little bit, and I forget I'm trying to think who it was. They hit me in the middle of the back, and when I was in the air, I thought they broke my back. I really did. It was. I think it was against. It was Willie Wood. It was against Green Bay.
Willie Wood. There you go.
Willie Wood, and he's in the Hall of Fame. And I mean, it's not a shame to get hit that hard, but you know, I didn't mind getting hit when I was looking at the guy, but when I didn't see the guy, the surprise is worse than the pain.
Oh, man. I suppose you probably took a week before you started breathing again.
So. Well, in those days, you know, we didn't work that hard on Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday and Thursday, we worked pretty hard. Friday, we put in the short yardage goal line. Saturday, we rested. And Sunday, we played. So, I mean, it was a pretty simple schedule. My whole life at that time was football, just like these guys are. You know, you say, well, they have another life besides football. Yeah, they have a family, and they do. But really, their whole life is football.
We appreciate the football expertise, the great memories as well. It's Bears-Packers week, and I got a good feeling about it. And we'll catch up with you next week.
All right, let's go Bears.
There you go. That's Mike Ditka, coach of your Chicago Bears, when the Bears were the Bears.
Yes, they were. And it's these non-contact injuries, mm-hmm. you know, that really – that you feel so bad for guys.
It also makes you question everything from the training to the supplements.
Was it something he did wrong in training? Probably not, but you don't know.
He's not old enough to hurt himself getting out of a chair yet. It's 8:53. Traffic, Mary. It is 8:57, and John DeCoste is here. John, would you do a quick plug for our New Year's Eve show?
Oh, yes, without a doubt. January.
December
31st, New Year's Eve. We are doing our second time that we have been at the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove. Mike Toomey from WGN Television in the Morning, Tim Banker, you, myself.
And special guest.
Special guest. And Bigfoot. Bigfoot's going to be there. How great is that?
I didn't know we were announcing that yet.
Yeah. Oh,
apparently
we're. Oh, yeah. We want people to know. Go to eventbrite.com. Look up for the Steve Cochran Show. You can get your tickets there. Or go to the Tivoli. They have a link on their page as well.
7 o'clock show. Lock it in. It's
Classic
New Year's
cinemas.
Eve.
Yes.
New Year's Eve for people that can't stay awake until midnight.
7 o'clock, yes.
And back with the CLTV 9 o'clock hour next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Yeah. 912, Steve Cochran Show. How you doing? That one was for Landecker. Anytime I talk up a record, I think, well, what if John's listening? He's a Hall of Famer. Still to come in this hour, updates obviously on what's going on in Texas, and this bizarre story from Donna Brazile, one of the most highly regarded Democrat Party movers and shakers, who has written a book that is viciously critical of not just Hillary Clinton and her campaign, but how her party operates in general. Which is an interesting strategy to sell a book because, well, that's your team. So I don't know if she thinks Republicans are going to buy this book. Anyway, we'll play some sound from her and talk about that a little bit later on as well. Rand Paul, the senator from Kentucky, attacked by a neighbor in his own yard, apparently. Some ongoing dispute he's had with a neighbor. Do you ever have a neighbor where you thought it could get violent?
Never.
Me either.
You know, there's actually some more information on this story.
Oh, what do we know?
His injuries are a little bit worse than we were told.
Yeah, five broken ribs.
Also, bruised lungs, and his aide says he could be out of action for 2 months.
And the guy tackled him from behind? Is that what they think happened?
I'm not sure. I didn't see any of those details about exactly what happened. But
this John, were you there?
Well, I was just curious. Does it say he got the first down?
Yeah, neighbor football got a little out of hand. It's not even Thanksgiving yet.
Something weird about this story. I don't know. I can't put my finger
on it. That's what we said this morning. Yeah.
The internets are saying that the attacker was a hardcore lefty. Paul's obviously a righty, and it was all about politics. But it seems pretty odd. The other guy is an anesthesiologist. Rand Paul's a senator, and this is some gated community. It's not the kind of thing we normally see in our neighborhood.
But they took their dogs for a walk.
Together. The Homeowners Association will definitely have to write you up over this.
Isn't Rand Paul a doctor, too? He's also a doctor.
It's an eye doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last night, we have a guest when we get to just a second here. But last night, I saw something that when it happens in the moment, you go, what? I went to get gas for the 2017 Chevy Tahoe.
White Lightning.
And because, you know, I knew I wouldn't get up early enough to do it today, and I wouldn't have been able to make it to work, and I knew you'd miss me. So I go in, and there's a guy in front of me in line. I had to go in to buy a bottle of water. I go in, and I'm standing there, and I just want to pay for my bottle of water. I'm not hurting anybody. And I'm standing in line. There's a guy in front of me who's asking questions about scratch-off lottery tickets, which, you know, at 9 o'clock at night is not all that amusing. Well, there's a guy standing behind me who's sort of flinchy. sort of jumpy. You know, enough to make me a little bit edgy. And then suddenly he bursts out, "Can someone else check me out because I got a baby in a car?"
Oh, man.
No.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
So he goes to the, he goes, "You okay?" I go, "Yeah, man. Go get your baby." And he checks out. He goes, before he leaves, I notice the car is parked at the gas pump. He's gassing it up. The car is still running.
Oh, God.
The doors are unlocked, and there's a baby in the car. Now, we live in a world where we all overprotect our kids. We just do. But that's not overprotection. That's just dumb. That's just
stupid. Plus, there's been a string of carjacking at gas stations.
Yeah. So I tried to get a license plate so we could take the father away from the children today. Not take the child away from the family. Take the father away and put him somewhere.
Wow.
Just stupid. He was buying like gum or something. Really?
Yeah, couldn't have waited?
That might have been a break glass, save baby kind of situation, like with dogs in hot weather.
And Abigail Grace was over all weekend, had a blast. And man, am I tired. It's amazing something that size could make you that tired.
Well, just in and out of the car seat constantly. That makes you exhausted.
There is less work. There are less straps and buckles on car seats now than there were on the first NASA rocket to the moon. It's unbelievable. We've got to get Captain Lovell on. I'm sure if I tried to strap Captain Lovell into a kid's car seat now, A, he'd fit because he's still in great shape. And secondly, he'd go, "Well, we didn't have this kind of problem on Apollo."
That's right.
We had half the straps.
It's unbelievable. But went to the Children's Museum, which figured on a Sunday afternoon, how busy could it be? Jammed. No Bears football.
Icky, yeah.
Yeah, no Bears football and rainy. What else are you going to do? Yeah, crazy. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there was only one fit, but you know, tiny like tantrum. But I didn't want to leave.
We get that.
So. It's, but I'm telling you, Abigail Grace, again, clearly the leader of all the grandchildren. I mean, it's the only one I have, but compared to all the other grandchildren. I'm sure your grandchildren listeners are great, but they're not Abigail.
No, mine's pretty good.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it, man. I don't doubt
it. She's starting to eat sweet potatoes. Very exciting.
Oh, that's going to change it.
Yep. She's getting stronger.
Somebody take cover now. At 9:17, the gentleman on the phone is, frankly, not just nationally renowned, but renowned around the world, Mark Goldberg. Mark Goldberg runs the Little Dog Farm and boarding school for dogs, and he knows how to train dogs in ways that we don't. Personally, Mark, I thought maybe just a piece of steak and a friendly attitude would help, but I'm sure I'm wrong.
Well, I got to tell you, Steve, I'm going to give away the secret to everything right now in just a few words. So everybody grab a pencil.
Okay.
The way I do it, it was not through years of study. It was not through dog behavior lessons. It was not through 25 years of living with and training dogs. It was simply the bacon underpants. So, you know, you just get out the sewing kit and the Applewood smoke, and you'll just be every bit as good as me.
I think Tommy John's doing a line of Applewood smoked underpants now, aren't they?
You slide around in your seat a lot, but the dogs will follow you anywhere. And
I bet they will.
Need, so.
Book's called Let Dogs Be Dogs, Understanding Canine Nature and Mastering the Art of Living with Your Dog. We're all dog lovers on this show. What's the number one mistake you see?
Well, I would say the number one mistake that owners make is they love their dogs without reservation, but without giving them any guidance. So the easiest mistake to make, well, let's talk about kids for a quick second, and the analogy will become really clear. You know, when you're raising a 15-year-old child, you should probably teach them how to stay out of jail, you know, educate these guys.
The basics.
Teach our kids, you know, how to be productive members of society. On the 16th birthday of your child, you probably shouldn't be doing shots with them, right?
You should probably
not be buying them beer and weed. This is not good parental behavior, because what it does is it prioritizes friendship over guidance and parenting. And I think all too many people just want their dogs to like them so much. They're so thrilled and happy to have a pet and a dog that they love them without doing the guidance and the, you know, and then teaching them the rules of civilized behavior. And I think that that can be pretty detrimental to dogs, because then dogs seem to think that there really are no rules on the behavior. And ultimately they grow up, they get wild, and then they get isolated. And that's very sad.
Are these lessons breed or timing specific? And the reason I ask that is you know, there are particular breeds that are more likely to get it, and at what age do you have to get them to get it?
Well, certainly, I think of it as culture. Every breed has its culture, right? So Italian people have their food. Well, boy, the Italian people and the Jews, we like the exact same sort of stuff. So
and
we
the Greeks.
All have sort of cultural things. Absolutely. So, however, what unites us is our humanity. We all have the same set of you know, dynamics psychologically going on, although we might prioritize certain things over others. And dogs are very much like that. So the breed of a dog tells that dog what to do, lacking instruction from a human being, right? So a Chihuahua is going to just bark a whole lot. A German Shepherd is going to guard his property. A Border Collie out of control is going to nip at the heels of the kids and all the company that comes in the house. But all of them respond to the same sorts of things. And what we've done in Let Dogs Be Dogs, the book, is to sort of delineate how to live with a dog in an intentional way, to teach people what it is that dogs really want from us and how to provide that in a way that makes the dogs really want to follow us. And that's the trick. You can train a dog to do anything you want, but if you raise the dog in a correct way, they're just basically born to keep an ear out for what you need, and that makes life with a dog much more pleasant.
Dave, jump in.
Mark, good morning. At what age is it, and I'm not bringing up the old, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but at what age is it too late to try to modify behavior in a dog?
Yeah, when the line goes flat on the monitor, listen, we teach old dogs new tricks every day, and sometimes they're very relieved, even at advanced ages, to find out that the universe has some meaning and that there's some order in the world. So I'll tell you a real quick story. I had a gentleman call me about his 13-year-old Maltese, who was not housebroken, who was going to the bathroom all over the house. And at the age of 13, he wanted me to train the dog to be good in the house. And I got to be honest, I made a mistake. I judged him. And, you know, I was like, why is it that you let a dog for 13 years do this? And then all of a sudden, in her geriatric years, you're in a rush to get this done. Not that I felt I couldn't train the dog, but I thought it would be stressful for the dog to change environments, you know, come live with me for that time. But boy, did he have such a great explanation. And what it was his mother's dog. She could tolerate it. He couldn't, but she passed away. He said, she's an elderly dog, but she's in very good health, and I just can't kill mom's dog. But I can't live with this either. So, of course, that melted my heart, and I did take that dog on. And you know what? She house broke up in 2 weeks. She was so thrilled to know that she didn't have to live dirty.
Yeah, that's the thing. One of my better friends in life is Dr. Sam, who's on the show all the time, veterinarian. He always talks about that. Pets, dogs want order. They want order. They want direction, the word you use right away. John, your question for Mark.
Just recently, we have two dogs, and our smaller dog, Katie, who is 4 years old, will pick up my glasses and walk away. She doesn't do anything with them, but
maybe
she'll just get them to her bed. I thought of that too. She does do our taxes. Let me be specific about that. But that just started, and I don't know what that is.
Well, if I were you, I would make an appointment at an ophthalmologist immediately. She may be trying to tell you something.
Oh, okay.
But look, you know, let's talk about the behavior. That's a fairly oddball thing on the one hand. Although, on the other hand, dogs sometimes seem to covet possessions which we are which carry our scent and which seem to be very close to us. So the average person who wears glasses, like you and me, we keep them close to us. So it may just be her manner of getting your attention. What I might do if I were you would be to take that natural behavior that she's just started doing herself and to channel that into something really interesting. So the next time she picks up your glasses, very calmly say the word glasses, hold out a treat, entice her to come in and trade her the treat for the glasses. And if you're consistent about this, I'd say in about 2 weeks you can go send her to get your glasses for you.
You know, and I think that's a great idea. I did try that. Here's the problem. I ate that treat before I even got to her.
Yeah, see, you got to be careful.
That's on me.
Well, you know, that goes right back to the bacon underpants. I don't recommend that.
The book, again, is called what, Mark?
Well, the book is called Let Dogs Be Dogs, and I'm here in the Chicago area at chicagodogtrainer.com. So if people want to get a hold of me, it's chicagodogtrainer.com. But the book boy, could save you an awful lot of heartache and an awful lot of money.
I would recommend
teach you how to live with a dog.
I'd recommend people get two copies. You're careless, you'll lose one, or your dog might take the other and try to read it with John's glasses. But the other piece of that story is that you do yeah. Skype lessons and things, too, for folks that might not be able to get to you immediately. So
I do. So if you are listening from some far-flung place, you know, we can Skype and you can get the information through there. And I should mention my co-authors, by the way, just to be nice about this. I co-authored this book with an incredible group of people. They are called the Monks of Newskeet. And they are New York Times bestselling authors in the field of dogs. And so they and we have been training and writing about dogs for 30 years. And so this is a book which combines the wisdom and experience of a group of monks.
So they're actual monks.
These are monks in a monastery on top of a mountain.
How about that?
Yeah. And they live in Cambridge, New York, which is a little village, literally on top of a mountain. And they do two things. They run their spiritual mission, number one, but number two, they breed and train dogs as the way of supporting that mission. And they also write books. And a lot of your listeners will be familiar with their book, How to Be Your Dog's Best Friend and the Art of Raising a Puppy. So our book that we wrote together called Let Dogs Be Dogs is sort of like the third approach. So
all right, last word, Dave Ennett.
Really great connection.
Mark, real quick, I did want to ask you this. My dog is, I think, about 8 years old. I had another dog before that. We've always used leashes to walk them. Now my kids have a dog. They use a harness. Our neighbors have a harness for their dog, supposedly more humane than walking them on a leash. Anything to that?
Well, typically I find it a little bit less humane. And mind you, everybody has their opinion on this, and I'm respectful of the various approaches and the various tools. But frankly, when one teaches a dog to walk correctly on a collar, you get the mind of the dog involved in what they're doing. Whereas if you use a harness, well, these are the things they attach to the huskies to get them to pull. So all you're really doing with a harness is using your physical power to just restrain the dog. So in general, dogs who are walked in harnesses are walking in a more escalated or agitated frame of mind, and dogs who are trained to walk nicely right by your side on a collar are sort of la-di-da, walking in a much calmer frame of mind. That makes them less reactive at people and other dogs. So the dog who walks nicely on a collar is certainly more pleasurable than the dog who is straining against you on a harness, but it takes some training to make that work.
You know, Dave, it's like on the weekends when you wear a harness and you try to walk and you know, someone's got a hold of you.
Yeah, but I'm kind of used to that. I'm not sure the dogs always are.
Just not following you around with a bag, I can promise you that.
Well, you guys you totally went up the bacon underpants thing with the harness, so...
It got weird. It got weird. I'm not going to lie to you, it got weird. Let Dogs Be Dogs. That's the name of the book. Mark, thanks for your fine work and your fun life. Mark Goldberg and the Monks of Newskeet. Is that right?
That's us, and I'm at chicagodogtrainer.com. Thanks so much for the interview, Steve. Appreciate talking to you guys.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Have a great day. 928, back in a moment on 720 WGN.
From the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
It's 9 o'clock hour on CLTV, wherever you're watching, wherever you're listening, on the radio, online. We appreciate it. And we like in this hour to have you meet people you wouldn't otherwise meet. We get a little more room to work at the 9 o'clock hour. One of those individuals is in studio now. Let me say hello to him. Stephen, pronunciation of last name?
Gaetan.
Stephen Gaetan. I'm not the first one to ask that question, I'm sure.
No.
Three tours in Iraq.
Yes.
Starting when?
2003.
So you signed up?
I joined right after September 11th, 2001. So
inspired by what happened?
Yes.
How old were you then?
I was 21.
Your wife was pregnant?
She just had a baby.
Oh, just had a baby.
Oh, wow.
First off, what kind of discussion is that? I mean, I remember, listen, I'm there with you. I always said we should have I'm 40, just turned 40 in 2001. And I was saying, hey, we should have a platoon of guys that are getting older, except it'd take us forever to get off the ground once we started the crawl. But in your case, fired up by what happened, the patriotism of the moment lasts, and you were in what branch of the service?
The Marine Corps.
For how long?
For 9 years.
9 years, three tours.
Yes.
When I was looking through the notes, you actually saved an Iraqi at one point. What were the circumstances?
At the time, I was in charge of a fire team, and our job was to sweep one of the main thoroughfares into the towns of Iraq for IEDs. So my group, we were just doing our normal sweep. We were ambushed, and a family came upon us, and my Marines there gave them, you know, what they usually do, lift up your shirt, your pants, so they can see if they don't have any, make sure they don't have any explosive devices on them. So this gentleman had two children with him, and what perceived to be is his father. So I jumped out of the vehicle, and one of my Marines came out of the vehicle to make sure I was okay. And the guy was bleeding quite a bit. So he was injured.
That's
by
the old man?
Yes. Yeah. So he was injured by some gun wounds. And then immediately just started what we call is administering first aid, life-saving steps. So you treat for shock, stop the bleeding, and do what you have to do until a medevac is able to get to the person.
How'd you know what to do?
A lot of training. So boot camp, okay. They train you right from the beginning, you know, how to be an infantryman, a rifleman. And that's one of the main things that you do, because sometimes you don't have a corpsman with you, which we love corpsmen, and you have to save each other's life in the heat of the moment.
But every group doesn't have one with you at all times, obviously.
Correct.
So you go out, and that happens, and you're decorated for it, and part of your distinguished service that you've had. But you mentioned boot camp.
Yes.
You achieved a rank as a drill sergeant that I'm not familiar with. What is it called? Master?
Drill master.
Drill master. What do you yell louder? What is that?
No. It's because you can yell louder than everyone. They pick you as a drill master.
No, what is a drill master?
So the drill master is you outperform a lot of your peers, and then you're handpicked by the general of the base to say, hey, your performance is so outstanding that you're the individual we want you to have to make sure those policies and procedures are being enforced. The high standards of the Marine Corps are being enforced, so that way these recruits, when they do earn that title, the United States Marine, that it's well watched, you know, and that basically you're the eyes and the ears of that general on that base.
But you're not the guy that goes out and screams at the recruits.
You do have to start there first.
Oh, you do a little of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you start there first. Your first year is horrible. I mean, your experience there is you're the workhorse.
Sure.
And
what would you say? John DeCoste just signed up. What would you say to John DeCoste? It's his first.
I'm sorry.
It's your first day with him.
We're gonna cut his meals in half right from the beginning, just right out of the gate. Cut him in half.
Actually, I deserve that. I totally deserve that.
And what do you do with a guy who comes from comedy, who's maybe got a little bit of an attitude? What do you say to a guy like that? Oh, funny boy's here, huh?
That would be me too.
The concept that seems to work, no matter you know who you are, is it's one team, one fight. So whether it's an individual or individuals, you treat everyone the same, and everyone either suffers or they get rewarded together. And that concept creates a lot of leadership.
Right, because everybody's running if you're the idiot.
Yes.
Okay.
And let me just clarify, you're cutting everybody's food.
Everyone. So you're probably not going to be popular around where you sleep.
It's going to be a rough day.
I don't know if you're going to make it.
When did you leave the service?
2010.
And what are you doing now?
I work for Monterey Security. It's a family-owned business. We do a lot of great things for veterans. It was actually, I want to say, it changed my life, because the transition from military life to the civilian world is extremely hard, and I don't think it really gets the attention it needs. But
for the families too, I'll bet, right?
Yes. I mean, there was a family meeting when I first said, hey, I'm going to join the Marine Corps right after September 11th, and like, are you crazy? You know what you're going to get yourself into. Same coming out, you know. Are you crazy? What happened to you? Why are you acting this way? You're a different person.
So was that PTSD related, or just trying to get your life back?
I don't really use that acronym or that term because I feel like it's a crutch, but it is very existent. I mean, the mental.
No, it exists. You're just saying you didn't feel like you had it, or you're not willing to say you had it.
Correct. I think, you know, you fight that so much to say, hey, I'm normal.
Were you coming home to a wife and kids?
I met my wife, my second wife, because the first one didn't work out because it wasn't a great idea to join the Marine Corps at the time.
Yeah, I'm sure she was thrilled.
Very happy. She threw a party.
Yeah.
I met my wife when I was a drill instructor in San Diego. She moved from San Diego to Chicago, as crazy as that is. And the first week we were back, she got stuck on Lakeshore Drive on that blizzard that we had.
Oh, you're kidding. She was one of those.
Man. You can imagine how that was. Yeah. It went very well.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's still here. She's still here.
How long have you been married now?
8 years.
How many kids total?
2.
God bless you, man.
Thank you.
Sounds like you're doing great work. You're talking about working for veterans. Is this payback for you? Is this I want to pay back to my brothers and
sisters?
Yes.
So, you know, Monterey Security allows me to do that. You know, they had a veteran program before I got there. When I came on board, we just kind of enhanced it. My brother, who owns the company, allowed me to use Monterey Security as a transitional period for me, you know, back into the civilian world.
Sure.
And that's the best I would say for a lot of veterans coming home is that's another level of service. You came from an industry of serving people, not for the money, because the money is for sure not paying well. So the
Watch
security,
your brother.
Yeah.
He's going to keep as much as he can. Oh,
I did not know what an HR department was until I came back home. Just let's put it out. But
Thanksgiving is coming.
Yes.
So your work at this at EVP, is that right? You are an EVP, I should say, at Monterey Security. You work at Monterey Security. What's your day? What do you do?
So I get up very early still. I still get up at 5 a.m. in the morning, you know, do my regular routine, and I get to work. So one of the main things that we do is make sure that we're recruiting our veterans. So we work with Catholic Charities, America Works, where we call these people second chancers because it is a second chance at life. It was a second chance for me to use Monterey as a vehicle back into the industry, service industry. So we use that. We do a lot of the training for free. We introduce them back into the civilian world under this structure because it's very similar. We changed a lot of what we did to mirror the structure in the military, so it's an easier transition for these veterans coming back home.
So Monterey Security gets it. Your brother's company gets it. They're doing a good job by doing this. But what's your message to other companies? Have
they should
some faith,
be
hire a vet?
They should be doing the same. I mean, mm-hmm. A lot of major corporations are doing it. We're a smaller company, local, born and raised, Chicago-born company. We're doing it here locally.
Right.
We team up with other agencies that, you know, hire veterans and, you know, rehabilitate them back into the civilian world. Because this is a huge deal for our company because it's one of the main reasons why this company was open is giving people a second chance into society, being a contributor to society in a positive way. And someone that's willing to kind of do that in a controlled, safe environment.
Is this your brother's company?
Yes.
Sounds like he's a good dude.
He's a great guy. I mean, I owe a lot to him because, and this is kind of where I get emotional, but.
He helped save you.
He did. Yeah. He saved my life, you know, back into the civilian world.
Sure.
And there's many people like myself out there, which is what drives me. I mean, motivation is. It lasts for a period of time, but that drive that my brother has and I have is to give these veterans a second chance. You know, that's what's longstanding because motivation comes and goes when you feel like it, but the drive, it never lasts, never ends. It's everlasting.
And let me be your big brother that you didn't ask for a second. Don't ever be ashamed of crying. Toughest guys in the world know it's okay to cry, and you're one of them.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, I thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Yeah, and appreciate you being here. For people that are out there listening, you're going, I have questions. This guy's walked the walk. Is there a way they can get a hold of you? Do they, you know, even if they have questions in general about getting back into life, I would assume you'd feel those.
Oh, yeah. We get them all the time.
So how do they, what's the best way to contact you?
You know, they go to the Monterey Security website, and my information is on there. They can email me, call me. My phone number is on there.
Tell them how to pronounce your last name again.
It's Gaitan.
Gaitan.
Yes.
Name even sounds tough, doesn't it?
It does.
It does. It's does. Good. Yes.
And how old are your kids now?
I have one that is 18, is freshman in UK, and then another daughter who is 2 years old.
A boy, girl?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, you're getting it done, man.
Thank you.
Done.
I appreciate it.
Still taking care of the rest of us.
Yes, I mean Monterey allows me to continue my service.
And other companies listen up for what this. It's maybe a smaller company, but it's a great model for other companies to follow, big, middle, or small.
I think it's great. I mean, we have the opportunity to work at Soldier Field, which is a sacred ground for us, especially it's an iconic landmark here in Chicago.
Sure.
And our veterans want to have a chance to be a part of that.
Amen.
And, you know, it's a great deal to do that with Monterey and myself and the veterans here that we hire.
If you're working a Bears game, are you more cranky after they lose?
No. It's
because I am.
The McCaskey family has been great to our family.
Well,
they embrace all the veterans, which is fantastic.
That's nice to hear.
You know, I just looked up the definition of your last name. It's half rations.
Exactly. See, I saw that when I first came in.
That was good.
Thanks.
John just told me in the break that you were going to have him drop and give you 20, but it was over 6 months. Is that right?
Yeah, so
I
there
need
was a time
on
period.
This.
Yes,
yeah,
there was a
fine.
Time period.
Sweet,
for sure.
Sweet. Thank you very much.
Great to see you, man. You're always welcome.
Thank
here.
You again. I appreciate you being
All right, 9:55. Bill and Wendy coming up, 7:20 WGN.